One more thing would not make much difference.
Aishana Karimova. She's apparently Nikolai's mother. Hmm.
Yuliana straightened the ribbon on her robe.
And how do you know this? Nikolai told me, but he had no knowledge of or part in it,
she added hastily.
And I've taken care of him.
Yuliana rose.
How? I confined him,
Vika said as unfeelingly as possible. Even though leaving Nikolai imprisoned had felt like harpooning her own heart, it hurt terribly, especially since she was still tethered to him, the rope jerking at the harpoon's barbs embedded inside her.
I trapped him in an egg.
Of course, Yuliana didn't flinch. Again. She wasn't human. She was iron in the shape of a girl.
Fine,
she said.
Leave him for now. Arrest his mother. We'll hang her later this morning.
Vika's mouth fell open.
I beg your pardon? Has the work of being Imperial Enchanter taken a toll on your hearing? No, I just... Isn't she supposed to have a trial?
Yuliana crossed her arms.
The Tsar is dead. The murderer is mother to the Enchanter, trying to destroy my brother. There is talk of treason and revolt underfoot. So no, I think we shall bypass a fair trial and simply execute her. There are times when justice takes the form of swift action. That time is now. But if you wanted mercy, you would have gone to Pasha with this information. But you came to me, so don't grow cowardly now, Vika. Tell my guards outside to have the gallows prepared. Arrest Aijana and keep watch on her until the hanging in the morning.
Vika stood in the middle of the anteroom.
Imperial Enchanter? I ought to be dubbed Imperial Jailer.
Or Jailer of Karimovs. For a second, she thought of what Nikolai had offered. If he was Tsar, she wouldn't have to do what Yuliana or Pasha said.
I could be Tsarina, and Nikolai and I could rule Russia together, with magic in the open, and no one to challenge or defy us.
Vika inhaled sharply. She could be a djinni, unleashed, no longer confined to the walls of a bottle. Magic sparked inside her, exploding like miniature fireworks, and without meaning to, she started to levitate. But then Yuliana tapped her slipper on the floor, and the bracelet heated around Vika's wrist. Vika snapped out of it and landed back on the ground.
What are you waiting for?
Yuliana asked, although it was clear she did not want an answer. Vika answered anyway.
For the day I can create my own destiny. I beg your pardon? Don't worry. Today is not yet that day.
Vika shook her head to rid herself of the tainted thoughts of ruling the Empire. For what Nikolai offered was not what she wanted. Not the way she wanted to forge her fate. She wasn't convinced it was what he truly wanted either. The magic inside her actually sparked again, as if in agreement. So Vika gritted her teeth, because there was a more immediate task at hand. Nikolai had been captured. Now his mother needed to be arrested as well. And then perhaps they could resolve this and bring the city some peace. At least, that was the plan. Chapter 43 Vika returned to the Black Moth, but as expected, Aijana had fled. There was, however, a lopsided set of footprints in the snow, as if one of her feet was heavier or slower than the other. Vika followed the trail. She was well trained in tracking injured animals. Healing them often involved finding them first. Then again, the way Aijana had sprung at the window of the Black Moth when Vika had come for Nikolai indicated that Aijana was no wounded creature. But at least her uneven steps made her easier to trace. The tracks ended in a particularly ill-lit corner of Tsarnaya Square, in an alleyway littered with broken crates and smashed bottles, echoes of lost fights and drowned sorrows half buried in dirty snow. The magic inside Vika thrummed, eager to be let out. But her heart had also risen to her throat, for she was about to arrest Nikolai's mother, who was a monster, but his mother nonetheless. Vika tried to swallow her heart back into its place. It budged just enough to allow her to make an official proclamation.
Aijana Karimova, you have been sentenced to death by hanging for the murder of the Tsar, Vika said,
even though Aijana wasn't visible. She was here somewhere, hiding behind stacks of debris or inside one of the ramshackle buildings.
It's inevitable that I'll catch you, so you'd save us both some trouble by surrendering without a fight.
There was a small shift in a trash bin to Vika's left, and she spun to face it. A white rat scurried out into her side.
Ah, Poslanik, of course it's you.
Poslanik climbed up Vika's leg, onto her arm, and to her shoulder. He squeaked in her ear what he knew. Aijana was behind the door of the second building on the right, which was guarded by a barricade of bottle shards jutting out of the snow, like teeth in the mouth of the legendary Arctic Yeti. Vika petted Poslanik's head. He squeaked once more, then leaped back down to the snow, getting out of her way for the scuffle that was likely to ensue. She could evanesce to surprise Aijana, but evanescing was risky when Vika didn't know where she was going. There were always a few moments of disorientation as her essence came back together, and in this situation, that meant she'd lose the element of surprise. There was also the small part of her that didn't want to surprise Aijana, that wanted to give Aijana a chance to prove herself harmless and worth sparing. So Vika tiptoed slowly toward the door. There was a lone, grimy window along the building, and she charmed an extra layer of dirt to spread across it, much like crystals of frost, only made of frozen mud, blooming like flowers of filth to obstruct the view. She glided over the barricade of broken glass and pressed herself against the door. Then she pushed it open a sliver, while simultaneously casting a ball of fire inside to light the room or hall into which she was entering. She held her breath, her magic and her pulse both pounding anxiously through her veins. It was a storeroom of some sort, piled high with more crates, these intact, a few of which had lids pried open to reveal the bottles of vodka and beer within. Vika's fire flitted around the room, leaving small flames in each of the corners to illuminate every recess.
Aijana, I'm here to arrest you, but I don't want to hurt you.
A crate came hurtling at Vika, and another and another and another. Vika flung out her hands and smashed each one in the air, the splinters of wood and glass blasting in all directions. Had she not been an enchantress with a shield around her, she would have been impaled at least a dozen times. So much for hoping Nikolai's mother was a harmless woman incapable of killing the Tsar. When the crate stopped flying, Vika shook wood and glass slivers from her coat. She exhaled loudly.
Well, there goes your chance at me taking it easy on you.
Aijana hissed and climbed up from behind a stack of crates. She crouched on a box, baring her yellowed teeth and wickedly long nails, a huntress ready to pounce.
You killed the Tsar, Vika said.
I did it for my son, whom you've taken.
Nikolai is safe.
I do not believe you.
Vika quirked her brow.
That's not my problem.
Aijana shrieked, a high-pitched keening worse than a thousand nails screeching against an endless pane of glass. Vika cringed, and her hands flew to cover her ears. Aijana leaped over the crates, golden eyes glowing, talons extended. She slammed into Vika's shield, but because Vika had her hands over her ears, she lost her balance, and they both tumbled backward to the storeroom ground, rolling apart in a tangle of arms and legs, knocking into crates and shattering more bottles. Vika scrambled to her feet, levitating to avoid the hazardous floor. Aijana rose just as quickly. A wedge of wood protruded from her shoulder, and she ripped it out as if it didn't affect her and threw the stake aside. The blood on her tunic seeped out of the fabric and seemingly back into her skin.
You can heal yourself,
Vika said as she caught her breath.
Never seen it done before?
Aijana sneered.
On the contrary, I too can heal wounds and mend broken bones. You're not as special as you may think.
Arrogant child! You have not begun to see what I am capable of.
I could say the same to you.
Aijana lunged at Vika again. But this time, Vika was prepared. She conjured a wall of ice in front of her. Aijana crashed straight into it. Then, in the moment that Aijana lay dazed on the wooden glass on the floor, Vika melted the wall and reformed it as shackles around Aijana's wrists and ankles, the ice thicker and stronger than any iron forged by ordinary man. Aijana snarled as she came to. She struggled against the restraints, attempting futilely to smash them against each other, and rattled at the icy chains.
I told you it would be better if you came without a fight,
Vika said as she took in the mess of the storeroom.
Now look at what you've left for me to tidy up.
Aijana hissed at her. Vika threw a gust of wind at her head and knocked her unconscious.
I am not even sorry about that,
Vika said. Then she walked around the storeroom and charmed the broken crates back together, stacking them neatly in a corner. She commanded a broom to sweep up glass shards and a mop to clean away the alcohol. It would take too much time to sort the mud out of the liquid and to separate the beer from the vodka and direct them back to the correct bottles. When the storeroom was in some semblance of order, Vika returned to where Aijana lay slumped on the floor.
I suppose the most efficient way to get you to the fortress is to evanesce you.
But Vika wrinkled her nose at the thought of her magic touching each of Aijana's putrescent particles. And who knew if the decaying body could survive being taken apart and put back together again? She could arrive as a pile of bones and strips of leathery skin. Yuliana would be furious if she didn't get the hanging she'd demanded.
All right, no evanescing,
Vika said, with no small measure of relief.
I'll have to transport you another way, in a manner deserving of a woman of your stature.
She snapped her fingers and a wheelbarrow appeared. She levitated Aijana and dumped her inside in a heap. She snapped her fingers again, and a tarp, made of extra rough hemp for minimal comfort, secured itself over the lump of Aijana's unconscious body.
There we go. A prison carriage suitable for a monster.
Vika paused, though, as a wave of remorse roiled through her. This was Nikolai's mother, monster or not. But a moment later, she remembered that Aijana had murdered the Tsar and tried to kill her, too, and any leniency Vika felt quickly evaporated. She opened the storeroom door and charmed the wheelbarrow to float over the glass yeti teeth, then land in the snow and roll itself. She also cast a shroud over them so passers-by would not see. And then Vika escorted the wheelbarrow onto the dark, early morning streets, all the way to the Peter and Paul fortress, where Aijana would finally meet death, once and for all. Chapter 44 Nikolai needed to escape the painted egg, but he also needed to conserve energy. He frowned as he looked at the curved wall surrounding him.
I suppose I could try reabsorbing Vika's magic.
It would be like repurposing his own magic when he'd attempted to escape the step dream. Of course, that hadn't worked, but hopefully this was different. He snapped his fingers at the abalone chaise longues, and both disappeared, the magic seeping into Nikolai. It was liquid and sweet, like cinnamon sprinkled atop honeysuckle nectar. But something inside him recoiled at it, as if it could not mix with magic Vika had touched, even though the magic itself had originally come from Bolshevnoi Duplo. Nikolai furrowed his brow, but as he took the desk made of polished rock, Vika's energy warmed him, and he dismissed his initial worry that there was something wrong with either him or her. The difference in his and Vika's magic was simply like oil and water. His had always been mechanical, whereas hers was natural. It made sense that his energy didn't quite know what to do with magic accustomed to commanding lilacs and eggs and wind and snow. After he took the carpet of flowers, though, Nikolai noticed he could still feel the softness of petals beneath his feet. He looked around the interior of the egg, and phantom outlines of the chaise longues and the desk remained, neither there nor not there.
What in the name of?
It was as if they were placeholders for the furniture. Nikolai could take away the specific chairs Vika had conjured, but he couldn't take away the essence of chair itself. Likely if he tried to vanish the walls of the egg, they would go translucent, yet stay intact, just like everything else.
So this is how you keep me imprisoned, is it? Clever.
To test his theory, Nikolai vanished the entire kitchen, cabinets, counter, plates, and food. As he suspected, faint outlines of each item remained.
But can I replace what you've created, as long as its concept is the same?
He asked, as if Vika were there, and they were merely discussing a magical hypothesis.
Let's see.
Nikolai turned to the ghost of the desk, but instead of polished granite, he wanted a metal one. He focused on the outline and imagined it filling in. A bar of iron appeared, and then another and another, and within minutes, Nikolai indeed had a desk designed like a small truss bridge.
Voila!
He said. He tapped his fingers, and two armchairs molded of silver filled the space where the abalone chaise longues had been. Beneath his feet, a violet Persian rug replaced the carpet of live flowers. And the kitchen he redesigned like the exposed interior of a clock, with visible screws and pendulums and gears. One need only pull a lever, and an orange or a slice of bread would slide down a chute onto a plate made of a shiny brass cog. Nikolai turned to the curved walls of the egg then and smiled. He had to concentrate harder on them, since they encapsulated the rooms of his prison completely and were therefore much larger than a few pieces of furniture. But after a while, the colors of the walls began to fade. Vika's magic trickled into Nikolai, and it was both comforting in its spiced warmth and unsettling in how it warred inside him, like drinking a pitcher too many of mulled wine.
I'll have to dispose of Vika's magic as soon as I get out of here, he thought.
He shifted uncomfortably in his skin. The walls, however, had faded as he'd hoped, and while still solid and intact, were now an empty, pale grey. Now he could transform them into a material he could better control. Nikolai turned the phantom walls into bronze. He lacquered the outside to mimic the intricate paint of the traditional Rasputin Yitsa, decorating it in blue with white enameled spirals swirling on the surface, and a serpent made of pure gold wriggling across its center. He thought of Swiss cuckoo clocks, and how they often had mechanized surprises inside, and thus created a hinge that would open to reveal the inside of the egg and its redone rooms and furniture. If Nikolai worked hard enough, he could actually make the hinge work and crack the egg open. He tumbled out of the egg and landed on the gravel of Candlestick Point. The enormous egg behind him opened straight through the middle, like a jeweled music box, to reveal the contents inside.
If the people of St. Petersburg weren't so frightened of magic now, they would have had a lovely new sight on Letney Isle to enjoy, Nikolai thought.
Then he laughed sardonically, for the trouble with magic was, of course, his doing. As soon as he got back onto his feet, he purged himself of Vika's magic. Beds of lilacs, blue hyacinths, and a rainbow of roses sprung up around Nikolai's egg. He took several steps back and stared at the garden for a moment. He'd never created something so vivid and alive before. But then he shook it off. It had been Vika's magic, not his. He returned to the Black Moth, but his mother was not there.
Damn it!
It did not take long to hear in the streets the announcement that the Tsar's murderer had been apprehended, and Aijana was to be hanged. Chapter 45 Nikolai located Aijana easily. Her hanging was to take place in the courtyard of the Peter and Paul Fortress, and a crowd had already begun gathering around the gallows as the sun rose. She wasn't on the platform yet, but she would be led there soon. She had to be somewhere nearby. Click, click, click. That sound. Nikolai listened harder, Aijana's fingernails. Click, click, click. Nikolai skirted the edge of the crowd, sticking to the shadows between the buildings that comprised the sprawling fortress. He homed in on the clicking and followed it to the red brick of the Kronvorskaya curtain wall. She's here. Nikolai could not simply free her, though. Aijana wouldn't be under the watch of ordinary police. It would be Vika there, for who else could restrain a woman who'd slaughtered dozens of the Tsar's guard, and then the Tsar himself? Nikolai hesitated for a moment. Every time he had to face Vika was harder than the last. He felt her slipping away from him, when all he wanted was to have her by his side. Nikolai took a deep breath, though, and stepped inside one of the doors that led to the part of the building that housed barracks. Again, he kept to the shadows, and darted through the halls past soldiers as they departed the mess hall and prepared for the execution.
Click, click, click. I'm nearly there.
Two police stood guard at the entrance to where Aijana was being held. Nikolai waved his hand in the air, and the men's pistols unholstered themselves and hit the guards in the backs of their heads. They slumped unceremoniously to the ground. This was why ordinary men were insufficient for watching an enchanter's mother. Nikolai opened the door and slipped inside another hall, this one darker than the ones in the barracks. A few lamps hung from sconces in the wall, their flames flickering and taunting. Which room was Aijana in? Vika leaned against a wooden door in the middle of the hall.
You liberated yourself from my painted egg. You made it difficult. Not difficult enough, apparently.
Nikolai advanced a few steps.
Is my mother in there? Yes, but I can't let her escape too. I don't want to have to hurt you. She killed the Tsar, Nikolai. That's not excusable. And she's going to die today. That said, I'm not heartless. I didn't have the chance to say goodbye to father before he passed.
Vika looked directly at Nikolai, her eyes covered in a sheen of tears.
I'm going to walk over here, to the other end of the hall, which, mind you, is not very far. But I'm going to study this sconce on the wall. And if you should happen to find your way into the cell for a minute to say farewell to your mother, well, I might not notice.
Nikolai just stood there for a moment. He'd been seething on the way here, but Vika's kindness suddenly doused the anger.
If you attempt more than a simple goodbye, though, she said, that I will notice. And when you're done, you and I have some unfinished business. I... thank you.
Vika nodded and turned to look at the sconce as she'd promised. Nikolai began to charm open the locks on the door. As the final one clinked open, Vika said,
And tread carefully in there. I have a couple of alligators inside, and they haven't been fed.
Nikolai laughed unintentionally.
Of course you do. Thank you for the warning.
He eased open the heavy wooden door and stepped inside. It was even darker in here than in the hall. He conjured a candle in his hand and shut the door.
Mother!
Shackles clinked in the far corner, on a platform raised just out of the alligator's reach.
My son! You have not been lost.
It is not so easy to be rid of me, Nikolai said. I believe it runs in the family.
He snapped his fingers, and two short lengths of rope appeared. They wrapped themselves around the alligator's snouts and secured tidy knots, and Nikolai stepped over them as if they were merely logs. He crossed the cell and examined the icy chains on Aijana's wrists, ankles, and around her entire body. She was shivering.
I'll get you out of here.
No,
she said.
They mean for me to die today, and I will. I only wanted to see you once more.
Nikolai still focused on the chains. he could undo the charms. They were much less complicated than the painted egg.
What are you talking about?
I was selfish in the past,
Aijana said.
I pretended I was selfless in giving a part of myself to you. But in truth, I was the opposite, for I did not give you everything, Nikolai. I wanted to live too, so I could see you grow. I was selfish, because I wanted to be able to be your mother. But that isn't what you need from me, is it? You don't need a mother. You've survived on your own. I've only made things more complicated. So I'll give to you what I should have given you long ago. And the only thing I have to give.
A black tear trickled from her golden eyes down her skeletal cheeks. Nikolai frowned at the tear. There was something familiar about it.
I'll give you my entire life,
Aijana said. He shook away the half-formed thought about her tears.
Mother, no!
He could not ask her to die for him.
I am as good as dead already, Nikolai. I won't run from here with you. I would only bring you more trouble. So either I die now, on my terms, and gifting my son all that I have to give, or I die on their terms, alone on a snowy platform with a noose around my neck. Have mercy on me and say yes. I say yes.
She was horrible. She'd killed villagers on the steppe, soldiers, his father. But she'd done it out of love. Misguided love. But love. How could Nikolai deny her one last act of love and mercy as her dying wish? Especially when this harmed no one. Not anymore. Nikolai dropped to his knees before her.
All right, mother.
Her tears flowed now. A slow and painstaking trickle like tar. Aijana circled her bony fingers around Nikolai's shadow wrists, where they were exposed between shirt sleeve and glove.
I love you, Nikolai,
she said, her throat dry, her voice strained.
Know that everything I have ever done has been for you, and that I am proud of you. Not because you are an enchanter, but because you are intelligent and passionate and strong. And because even though you may never truly love me, you showed me tenderness. You let me into your life.
Aijana closed her eyes. She nestled her head against Nikolai, and then she began to send her energy into him. It started as a thin stream, cold and sharp, and Nikolai gasped as he received the energy she'd gleaned from parasites that fed on rot and death, and from the bodies of all the people she'd killed. Deuces! It was thick and sticky black, like her tears, like the shadowed feeling that had been roiling inside him ever since he broke free of the step dream.
It was you,
he said as Aijana's grip on his wrist grew tighter.
You transferred energy to me when I was unaware. That's how I had enough power to escape the dream bench, and to enchant the Nivar fate, and to free myself from the painted egg.
For the first and second, yes. I gave you my energy while you were asleep. For the egg, I don't know about an egg. That was your friend, Renata.
Renata? But how could she make me so strong?
I passed Galina's energy on to her.
What?
He ripped his hands away from Aijana. She cried out as if the loss of the connection caused her physical pain. Nikolai staggered away, shaking his head.
You forced Renata into your service! Aunt Galina isn't abroad, is she? Oh, devil, take me! You killed her, too!
Aijana swayed and buckled to the splintered platform. Her skin was so dry now from gifting him her energy, it crumbled in flakes off her face. The sinews in her neck strained, and the golden light in her eyes was like a candle flame about to expire.
You expected less from me?
She rasped, every word now taking enormous effort.
It had to be done. She deserved it.
No, she didn't.
A complicated cocktail swirled through Nikolai. A mix of gentlemanly horror with the desire to heap misery and trauma upon Aijana. Galina had not been particularly kind to Nikolai, but she had taken him into her own home and spent years training him. She deserved a better end than what she had been given. Aijana stretched her hand out to him. Her arm trembled from the effort.
My son, please, let me give you what remains.
He looked down on her. She recoiled. His disgust must have been palpable, even on his shadow face. Nikolai turned and started toward the door.
Wait! Have mercy!
Aijana's chains rattled against the platform.
Don't leave me!
Nikolai stopped in front of one of the alligators.
I left you a long time ago, he said without turning. But because I'm a gentleman, I'll grant you a measure of mercy, and not force you to face your death publicly on the gallows.
He stepped over the beasts to the door. He uncast the charm on the ropes, and the alligators' mouths snapped at their freedom. He clapped his hands, and the platform on which Aijana lay disappeared, hurling her onto the stone floor. He exited the cell and shut the door, re-engaging all the locks behind him. It was gentlemanly mercy to spare her from the gallows. But the darkness from her energy, now raging inside Nikolai, qualified how that mercy was delivered. A measure of mercy, he'd said. Aijana's shrieks echoed out of the room above the snapping of alligator's jaws. Or perhaps it was the snapping of her brittle bones. Vika whirled from the sconce, eyes wide.
He averted his gaze. I'm finished. I've said my final goodbye. Nikolai.
He shook his head. He stalked away. Vika just gaped and let him. Chapter 46. Vika sat immobile against the wall, staring at the door at the end of the hall from which Nikolai had departed. She hugged her knees to her chest as she replayed what had just happened, against the backdrop of silence in the fortress, for there were no more moans issuing from Aijana's cell. Vika could understand how Nikolai had felt when he'd left the cell. Aijana might have been a monster, but she was still his mother. Sergei's death was recent enough that Vika curled into herself at the memory of the painful emptiness she'd felt at his loss. The Tsar and Tsarina were gone too. So much death, and Vika, Nikolai, and Pasha had all been forced to plow forward without mourning or grieving properly. The game had demanded it of them. The Empire had required it. Look how well that had turned out. But Vika could try, at least, to give Nikolai a chance to grieve. That was part of why she'd let him go, and she could also show him in another way that she cared. Perhaps she could reach the old Nikolai that was buried deep beneath his blinding anger. Perhaps that Nikolai could still understand that he was not alone. Because she'd overheard, through the walls, his conversation with Aijana. Now Vika understood what was wrong with Nikolai, why he was different. He had been absorbing energy from his mother, who was made of darkness. But the way he had looked when he'd left, the regret mixed in his misery. There must still be some good inside him, even if only a wisp. Vika wanted to believe it was not lost yet. She closed her eyes and thought of the morning sky outside. She could feel the weight of the clouds, full of droplets of water, ready to blanket the city with more snow.
But not today.
Within the clouds, the droplets evaporated. In their place, yellow petals appeared in all shapes and sizes, long and thin, round and short, heart-shaped and oval and ruffled and more. The clouds grew even heavier.
Now.
At Vika's command, the clouds burst open. Yellow petals tumbled out, swirling around one another in the wind and coming together in a flurry of flowers, each as unique as the snowflakes they had replaced. There were dahlias that looked spun of honey, and roses with daisy centers, and marigolds on twin stems like yellow cherries. The sky over St. Petersburg was an endless cascade of floating flowers, a memorial to all those who had been lost but not forgotten.
"This is for Sergei,"
Vika said quietly from where she still sat inside the fortress walls.
"And for the Tsar and the Tsarina, and even for Aijana."
She hoped Nikolai would see the flowers and understand they were for him, too. Chapter 47 Nikolai stood on the side of the road that led from the Winter Palace to the Peter and Paul Fortress. The sky snowed yellow funeral flowers about him, but he was too numb to be moved. Instead, he'd cast an invisibility shroud around himself so that no one would see him while he waited here. But he was full of Aijana's energy now, and once he pounced, there would be no doubt who had attacked. Soon enough, the sound of wheels spinning over icy snow filled the air, and a golden carriage approached. There was a painting of the Summer Palace on its door, and the handle was a graceful stretch of a swan's neck. The double-headed Romanov eagle ornamented the side of the carriage, and more eagles decorated the gold-trimmed roof.
"Bonjour, mon frère,"
Nikolai said under his breath. He waited for the guard leading the way to pass. Then, as the carriage neared Nikolai, he jabbed at the air with his finger. The bolt securing the wheels came undone. The carriage rocked violently, for it was going too fast for the momentum not to carry it. The wheels teetered and flew off the coach. Shouts came from within. A boy and a girl, Pasha and Yuliana, as the carriage careened off the road. Nikolai slashed his hands in front of him, and in that second, the beautiful components of the coach morphed into sharp pieces. The painted panels became knife blades, and their edges pivoted inward like a life-size grater, but one made to shred a Cesarevich rather than carrots. The swan's neck that had served as a door handle turned into a beaked spear. The Romanov eagles melted, threatening to drop molten metal onto the occupants within. The carriage began to topple onto its side. In moments, Pasha and Yuliana would be impaled against the blades. The guards in front and behind the coach yelled in alarm, but there was nothing they could do. Nikolai laughed, and the energy he'd taken from his mother seemed to laugh with him. The coach crashed. Everything went eerily silent. Gavril, the captain of the guard, leaped off his horse and rushed to the carriage. The rest of his men quickly followed, some on foot and some surrounding the fallen coach with their horses.
"Your Imperial Highnesses!"
Gavril called.
"Quickly, help me pull apart the carriage!"
he ordered the nearest guards. They tried to pry away the walls, but it was like gripping sword blades, and they cried out as they came away with bloodied hands. Gavril attempted the door, but the swan spear stabbed at him. Nikolai smirked by the side of the road. But then, from within the carriage, Pasha said,
"Stand back!"
Gavril and the others startled.
"What in the devil's name?"
Nikolai craned his neck to get a better look.
"You heard his Imperial Highness!"
Gavril said, as he gestured for his men to step away from the carriage. The door burst up and open, kicked out from within.
"Take the Grand Princess,"
Pasha said, still from inside the coach.
"No,"
Nikolai whispered. How could they have survived? A white glove, stained by a bit of blood, emerged from the carriage and through the now upward-facing door. Gavriel hurried over and grasped it. Yuliana climbed carefully up and out over the sharp walls. Pasha followed right behind her. He grabbed Yuliana as soon as he was out and embraced her. Gavriel looked from them to the overturned coach, to them again.
Your Imperial Highnesses, how did you...
The Imperial Enchanter cast a shield around me, Pasha said. It protected me from the blades.
Vika conjured a permanent shield.
Nikolai gaped. As far as he knew, she was still at the fortress. He hadn't known it was possible to cast an enchantment as powerful as a shield that could last indefinitely and react to new threats, even while the enchanter herself was not near enough to see, precisely, what threats she needed to protect Pasha from. This was a clear evolution of their magic.
Does the Grand Princess also have a... shield?
Gavriel asked. He said shield, like he was reluctant to accept the concept, and glanced about the rest of the guard, as if realizing that his men were possibly obsolete.
No,
Yuliana said.
Pasha wrapped himself around me. The fool.
But she huddled into her brother's chest and stayed there, stiller than Nikolai had ever seen her before. Her usually pristine ringlets were in disarray. Blood streaked her face, where several cuts slashed across her cheek.
I would do anything to protect you, Pasha said, as he tightened his arms around her.
Aijana's energy was still so fresh within Nikolai, he didn't feel even a twinge of remorse as he watched Pasha and Yuliana. Instead, it occurred to him that he could put an end, at least, to Yuliana and the guard right now. They stood on the side of the road, completely exposed, and Pasha would not be able to shield them all. Nikolai looked up at the sky. Yellow petals continued to flurry down. The entire landscape was covered with the mournfully beautiful snow that smelled of honeysuckle. Not just any honeysuckle, though. This was overwhelming, perfuming the entire atmosphere. Nikolai's head began to swim, and he swayed on his feet. But Pasha, Yuliana, and their guard seemed unaffected by the flowers. They continued to stand without problem next to the knife-edged carriage.
These flowers are for me,
Nikolai realized. Vika must have done something to them. Homed in on her botanical knowledge from Sergei and her understanding of Nikolai, and created blossoms to weaken him, like catnip for a murderous enchanter. Nikolai could hardly keep his eyes open, let alone cast anything competent to kill Yuliana and Gavril. Plus, if he stayed here much longer, he might lose hold of his invisibility shroud, and given the chance to capture him again, Vika would not let him escape this time.
I have to go.
The yellow flowers continued to fall. They were intoxicating. A spark of warmth flared inside Nikolai. Just a single spark, though, and Aijana's darkness quickly smothered it. Nikolai sent a drowsy glare in Pasha's direction, and then he retreated to sleep off the effects of Vika's enchantment. But before he left for good, he snapped his fingers twice. It wasn't much, but it was all he could manage for now. The falling flowers transformed to newspaper confetti, and every strip proclaimed the same words. The Cesarevich is a bastard. His father was the Tsarina's lover, staff captain Alexis Okotnikov. Chapter 48. Footsteps echoed in the fortress hallway. Vika was still sitting on the ground, head bobbing as she dangled on the cusp of falling asleep. She hadn't been able to rest since when? So much had happened, she couldn't keep track of the last time she'd laid her head down in bed. But Vika wouldn't get a chance to sleep yet, for a girl's voice echoed from down the hall.
J'en ai assez!
I have had enough. That must be Yuliana, likely having come upon the guards Nikolai rendered unconscious, or killed, on his way to Aijana. And any second, she'd burst through that final door, to find not only that her father's murderer was already dead, and hence she'd been deprived of watching Aijana hang, but also that Nikolai had escaped from imprisonment, and Vika had let him go. Vika dropped her head to the tops of her knees. A minute later, the door did open, but it was not the angry stomping she'd expected. Vika looked up slowly. Gavril, captain of Pasha's guard, entered with his pistol drawn. Ilya followed. Pasha was right behind them, a gun in his hand too. He scanned the hall, from Aijana's locked cell to the flickering sconces on the wall, and finally to Vika curled up on the floor.
Vika!
He stashed his pistol away and rushed across the hall. Gavril and Ilya spread out to cover him.
What happened?
Pasha asked as he reached her.
Are you all right?
She couldn't respond. Pasha gathered her in his arms, and for once, she let someone console her. She released her knees and allowed her body to go slack against him. Yuliana stomped in through the door, despite the protests of the last guard, who trailed after her.
I assume it's all clear,
she huffed as she crossed the hall to where Vika huddled against Pasha.
I'm not sure I even want to know the explanation for what happened here.
Pasha sighed.
Give her a minute, s'il vous plaît.
Vika stared at Yuliana. Her hair was a mess, and dried blood was smeared across her face. Vika looked to Pasha. His hair was also a mess, but that was normal, which was why she hadn't noticed before that something was awry. Vika pulled herself together.
What happened? Are you all right?
The good news, Pasha said, is your shield works. The bad news is, Nikolai tried to kill us.
Vika clambered to her feet. She'd feared something like this would happen, that Nikolai's grief would drive him to extremes again.
Are you all right?
Yes,
Pasha said.
No, we're not,
Yuliana said, as she marched over to the door of Aijana's cell.
Unlock this,
she said to Vika.
I've had enough of the Karimovs. I'm going to strangle Nikolai's mother with my own hands.
She's already dead,
Vika said.
I beg your pardon?
Yuliana whirled to face her.
Nikolai let the alligators loose. Alligators? Nikolai! You had better start explaining, Enchantress.
Pasha squeezed Vika's shoulder, and she told them what had transpired. When she was finished, Yuliana flew at her, grabbing Vika by both arms and shaking her.
Nikolai tried to kill my brother! And what did you do? An atrocious job at trapping him. And then you allow him to waltz in here to see our father's murderer and steal justice from us. And then, you shower him with flowers as if in a parade while he tries to kill us again.
Yuliana slapped Vika across the face.
Yuliana!
Pasha grabbed her and yanked her away. Vika rubbed her cheek and looked at the Grand Princess.
I deserved that.
No, you didn't,
Pasha said. Vika stared at him.
How can he still be so good?
You deserve worse,
Yuliana said. Vika could not deny that. Yuliana seethed.
You found a loophole in my orders and undermined them on purpose, didn't you? Because you still have the absurd notion that you're going to save Nikolai. Well, there will be more specificity in my orders going forward to ensure that you comply.
She looked pointedly at Vika's wrist. Vika closed her eyes. She could already feel the cuff tightening, a precursor to the confines of her world narrowing.
And furthermore,
Yuliana said,
you won't use any magic at all unless explicitly commanded by Pasha or myself.
Vika's eyes flew open.
What? No! Why?
Yuliana smirked. But it was Pasha who answered.
I'm sorry, Vika. It's for the Empire, though.
Do you know what reports came into the Imperial Council this morning?
Yuliana asked, or more accurately, accused. But of course, Vika didn't know. She'd been a touch busy here at the fortress. Yuliana didn't wait for a response.
Farther south, peasants are beginning to refuse to go near the Volga River. there are tales of a monster, half catfish, half man, who will snatch and drown anyone who dares draw water after dark. The peasants are mad with fear, and the region grows more unstable by the day.
Vika gasped. It couldn't be. But it sounded exactly like Vojinoi, the fish king from the old Russian fables Ludmila used to tell when Vika was little. Vika wondered what other wild magic was waking up in Russia that they didn't yet know about. Her stomach turned. Pasha tried to put his hand on her arm, but she pulled away. He looked at the floor as he spoke.
The more magic the people see, the more they believe, and the greater the power that flows from Bolshebnoi Duplo. That's good when you're the one using magic for Russia, but it's beginning to manifest itself in ways we can't anticipate. Whether that fish monster is real or not, the people believe it, and that's what matters, at least for now. And then there's Nikolai. The magic is terrifying when Nikolai is the one wielding its growing power. After the harm he's caused our people, and the attempts on my and Yuliana's lives, it's clear we need to stop him. If we can tell the people that magic is no more, Bolshebnoi Duplo's power will decrease, and Nikolai will become more limited. And perhaps we can quell the irrational fear in the countryside.
Vika shook her head. Her mouth curled into something that looked like a deranged smile, but it was panic, not happiness, that gave her the expression. It was as if her mouth didn't quite know what to do.
You need me and my magic. You need me to be able to trap and stop Nikolai. Yet it appears you cannot actually manage that,
Yuliana said.
This morning is further evidence that we need a different tactic. All this magic is causing more trouble than it solves.
And I'll be safe, Pasha said.
Your shield protects me. Yes, but you told the people magic was good,
Vika said, grasping for arguments.
If you change your mind now, it will undermine you.
Vika.
Pasha planted his hands in his hair and pulled at the locks.
I truly am sorry. Yuliana and I have enough to deal with, though, with the food poisoning from Nikolai's fate and the people's now hysterical distrust of magic. Besides the rumors of the fish monster, witch burnings are cropping up all over the countryside, and here in St. Petersburg, there are rumors of revolt underfoot. The Tsardom can't be seen siding with your power except as a last resort. We'll say we made a mistake. I'm young. The people will forgive me a misstep. But I have to do this, because I need to re-establish stability. You know I wouldn't do this to you if I had a choice, right? It's for the Empire.
Vika could only look from the double-eagled cuff to Pasha again.
It's not forever, he said gently. Just until we regain a semblance of calm and control. What we've been doing, allowing the existence of magic to be public knowledge, isn't working. So I have to try something else. But if we really need your magic, if this strategy proves wrong, we'll reinstate you right away.
He relinquished the tugging of his hair and reached a hand toward her. But unlike earlier, when she'd allowed Pasha's fingertips to nearly graze hers, this time Vika pulled away. He couldn't take away her magic, only enforce the prohibition. The bracelet would scorch her if she tried to disobey. But even though Pasha hadn't taken her actual power away, Vika felt as if the constant sparks that had danced through her body ever since she was born had faded to the faint glow of dying embers. Her blood, which had always run hot, seemed to shift several degrees cooler. And the brash energy that ordinarily allowed Vika to command a room now dwindled, leaving her just another girl. If she was a djinni, Pasha and Yuliana were her masters, and they had just stuffed her back inside a bottle that was markedly too small. Chapter 49. Back in the Winter Palace later that afternoon, Pasha handed the signed edict to Gavriel.
Here it is. Make sure it's announced and heard throughout the city.
Right away, Your Imperial Highness.
Gavriel saluted.
And you'll oversee the safe evacuation of any citizen with red hair, correct?
My men have made all the preparations you requested. We will offer to help anyone who wants your protection.
Be careful, Gavriel. Evacuate them under cover of night. And remember, head east. A number of witch burnings have already been reported in the south, and the traders coming through the outposts there are not helping. They're passing off their ordinary trinkets now as wards against demons and black magic.
East, then, Your Imperial Highness.
Pasha nodded wearily.
Thank you. Shut the door on your way out, please.
Gavriel saluted again and left to carry out his orders, closing the door to the Tsar's study behind him. Pasha sank back into the chair. His own brother had tried to kill him again, while he was still trying to recover from the first attempt, and having to take magic away from Vika had only compounded what was already an unimaginably horrifying day. He wanted to lie on the floor and throw up, like he'd done at the end of the game when he'd been filled with a similar whirlpool of conflicting emotions, anger at the betrayal by Nikolai, and sadness that it all had to end, that someone would have to die. But this time, there was also anger at himself, along with remorse, for Pasha knew that none of this would have started but for his decisions.
"Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown."
Shakespeare had it right, and Pasha didn't even have a crown yet. Of course, if he didn't find a way to stop Nikolai, Pasha might never even have the chance to be Tsar. And if he did, there would still be trouble. For the city had now been reminded again that his mother had had a lover around the time he was conceived. Even Pasha wasn't sure of his own legitimacy. His nausea grew keener, but only in part due to fear of death. It was also due to the possibility of never achieving what he'd been groomed for his entire life. Pasha clutched the edge of the desk as the realization hit him. He actually wanted to be Tsar. He'd traveled abroad with his father and visited courts in England and Khanates on the steppe. He had studied foreign policy, economics and war, and although they weren't his favorites, they were in his blood as much as hunting or reading Greek tragedies or sneaking out of the palace were. Pasha loved Russia with the entirety of his being, and he wanted to throw up because of the immensity of it. He retired soon afterward to his rooms, and did not leave the rest of the afternoon. Meanwhile, Gavriel and Ilya crisscrossed St. Petersburg, announcing for everyone to hear,
"By order of Pavel Alexandrovich Romanov, Cesarevich of all Russia, the use of magic is hereby forbidden, and the position of Imperial Enchanter eliminated."
Chapter 50.
"Come in. It's freezing out there,"
Renata said as she ushered Nikolai into Madame Boulangère. There was no one else in the bakery, shopgirl or customer, for most were still too ill from the Nivar fate. Renata shut the door behind Nikolai, flipped the sign to indicate the bakery was closed, and fastened the lock. Nikolai looked around at the floral French wallpaper and the small cafe tables surrounded by brocaded chairs.
"Not much different from Galina's."
Renata laughed.
"In some regards, not much at all. Tea?"
She darted behind the counter and began to fill a porcelain cup. She placed it on a tray, along with sugar and lemon and cream, and the pain au raisin, since she knew it was one of Nikolai's favorites. In less than a minute, Renata came back around the counter and set everything down on one of the cafe tables.
"You don't need to serve me, you know,"
he said as he hung the greatcoat and top hat on a brass hook near the door.
"Please sit."
Renata blushed and stood for a few seconds, unsure whether to keep her apron on or take it off. But given that the last time she saw Nikolai, they'd kissed, perhaps taking off her apron in front of him now would seem too suggestive. Or was she making too much of nothing? Heavens, she was probably making much too much.
"Why are you here?"
she wanted to ask. Perhaps it was only a friendly visit. She and Nikolai used to chat every day when they lived at the Zakrevsky house. Or perhaps he wanted more energy from her, which would mean he might